welcome to Inside the Writer's Cafe, brought to you on webtalkradio.net. I'm Cheryl Nason. Each week on our show, we feature conversations with top authors about their latest work, and we include both fiction and nonfiction. Susan Zeidler holds a BA from State University of New York at Albany and an MS from Northwestern University's Medill School of Journalism. She spent more than two decades as a news reporter and an award-winning journalist, writing about some of the world's most momentous events. Susan also studied piano and later went on to delve deeply into jazz. As a musician, she's performed around the world. She's also a real Renaissance woman. She's written two screenplays called Tailspin and Hit Single, and today she's with us to talk about her novel, The Practice Room. Susan, welcome.
Hi.
It's a pleasure to have you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Well, The Practice Room is such an interesting novel. Let's give our listeners just a little bit of an overview of what the book's about, and then let's talk about it.
Sure. It involves a young girl named Zoe Brown who is searching for some secrets. She's never known her dad. She's raised by her single mom, Peggy, who's a professor at a university. And she's also dealing with the typical tween and teen conflicts that happen with friends. And so she's a little bit at a crossroads in her life, and she finds herself one night, through different certain circumstances, wandering on the university campus where her mom works. She usually doesn't do that by herself, but she winds up in the practice room in the music center, and then something supernatural happens to her. She can't get out. The doorknob goes missing, and something transforms her, and music sort of takes over her, and it's called music morphing. Her body embodies all these musical elements throughout the book, but the first time she just music absolutely possesses her, and she can't stop playing the piano. And what happens is that it winds up powering this music room, which takes off and travels to another land. And throughout the book, she winds up music morphing and learning about music and traveling to this mystical place, which also transforms into historical places that underscore what she's learning. So in other words, during some time she's learning about rhythm, she goes to Harlem, where there's this wonderful American Idol contest at the time. And that's after the race riots. The mayor of New York decided to have a big dance contest to boost morale. So she witnesses this, and she's learning how rhythm and music at different times in history have helped bind people in crises. And at the same time, she's learning to overcome her own personal crises, and she's also learning the secrets about her dad. So it's a book of self-discovery, and it ties it all together at the end. She finds the father she's never known, and she's a coming-of-age book as a young girl who also grows
up. Well, this is a fascinating idea, the way that you've put this together, because now the audience for this is really a younger audience. That was your intended target, right?
Yeah, 12 or 11 and 12 and up.
But what you've done in this, I found quite intriguing. This is basically the story of Zoe, but you also intertwine musical theory, musical history, and as you just said, you put in some historical events and you give them a musical context, which I thought was really a fascinating way to do this. Where did you get the idea to have her, quote, music morph? Which it's like that growing up. She's on that brink of young adulthood, that tweener teener kinds of things, and now she's music morphing. And Zoe is, when we first meet her, she is a beige kid. I was a beige kid, so I identified with Zoe very easily. You know, you sort of stand against the wall and you blend in. You have your best friend, Tammy, And that's really where you are. But you sort of blend in. You don't feel like you have anything exceptional. There's nothing extraordinary about you. But music morphing changes her life.
Well, I had this short story I wrote when I was back in Albany. So it was actually decades ago. I wrote this short story about this young girl who, you know, just gets locked in this music room and emerges a better musician. She was frustrated when she went in there with her own musical abilities, and then being stuck in that music room made her transform herself. And that story always stuck with me. I don't even know where it is, the actual physical short story, but all of a sudden, about 4 years ago, I woke up, and in the middle of the night, I think, I got an epiphany. I was like, oh my goodness, I could sort of expand this into a book. And that's when the music morphing idea came to me, because I think I had, in the interim, I had delved even deeper into my own music study, and I learned all these different parts of music theory, and somehow I realized if somebody actually embodied rhythm or dissonance or harmony, it would be, and actually studied it and traveled to places where she could really understand it, it would be interesting. And I loved the idea of her traveling in this music room. So that's sort of how the idea was born. Mm-hmm. I think it was a culmination of all my own personal studies and explorations as well.
I really like the way that you have this happen, and she meets characters along the way. I mean, and she finds out not only things about herself, but she finds out things about other people that she didn't know, that she would have never known if she had not begun this journey to music land by music morphing. And I really like that whole idea. I think the book has a little bit of a magical quality to it. There's a little, it's certainly not a Harry Potter kind of magical, but it does transport us through space and time to another place where there are purple talking squirrels and people who look like people in Zoe's daily life, but they have a different name and they're a different person when they're in music land. Peggy, Zoe's mother, is also having her own struggle. And I like the way that you sort of mirror the struggle of mother and daughter, because they're both struggling with the same kind of issues, but Peggy's an adult. And I didn't find this book, from an adult perspective, boring or insulting. You know, some children's books that you'll read, you'll go, okay, I know what this is about. You kept my attention, Susan. You did a really nice job with the story.
Well, thank you. I think also I'm a mom, and you think a lot of my experiences as a journalist and a mother informed the book as well. You know, so it was not only just my musical experiences. It was everything. And I've been told that too. People have enjoyed the mother-daughter aspect of it. There's a big mother-daughter story going on here as well that, you know, so a lot of my friends' moms, and my it's aimed towards children, but I think the mothers are enjoying it as well. A lot of my peers, in other words, are really enjoying this book. It's a fast read, and I think a lot of people don't have time to read 600-page tomes. So, I mean, mine is 250 or something like that, but it moves quickly. But it speaks to a lot of adult issues as well. I think that's another nice thing about it, is it sort of is raising the bar for children or kids who read it. My daughter loved it, and her friends are loving it, and they're also learning about music and history. And I feel good about that, too. Like you mentioned, they do meet certain characters, and I feel great that I'm introducing 10 or 11 or 12-year-old kids who may have not even heard of Jimi Hendrix, believe it or not. You know, I mean,
exactly.
So, you know, they go to Woodstock. That was my daughter's favorite part, is that when she music morphs and travels to Woodstock, and they also learn about communism and the Berlin Wall, the fall of the Berlin Wall, and
the Titanic. I taught English in high school, and one of the things that I always wished was that there was a way, like you've done in the practice room, to sort of give breath sounds and real life to some of those historical events, because I think often when kids in, you know, middle school, high school are studying these historical events, they're looking at them in terms of sort of by themselves, sort of out here isolated, and so it has no real ring of reality for them. And the way that you took the music room, the practice room, and put those historical events into Zoe's life and had her experience some of the things, I thought that was very effective, and I think that's a very effective learning strategy. And if there are teachers who are listening to our interview, I would hope that this would give them an idea. Maybe they have their kids even do something like this. You know, create a sort of music room-like story around some sort of historical event that they may be studying. I just thought that was very powerful, and I think it gives a different feeling to history. I think it gives it some life and makes it interesting.
Thank you. Yeah, I hope so. I'm excited because this summer they'll be reviewing the book in Allen magazine, which is the Assembly for Literature for Adolescents, and that will go to all these English teachers, the National Conference Teachers of English. So, yeah, I think it really does. I mean, I'm really happy about that. And also for people who, they really learn music. I studied jazz, but I think it's a fun way to learn about different components of music, like dissonance and harmony, that most people don't really. But it's interesting to me. I think I really wanted to bring across the point that we're all musical. Even if we don't perform, you know, everybody just reacts to music on a physical level and a spiritual level. And I think that's another recurring theme of the book. Right, like I said earlier, throughout times, music has brought people together when, you know, everything else kind of was not. In these different times of history, the first time when she goes to that time in Harlem, a lot of people, you know, people of my parents' generation who actually were alive then, but they don't remember it, or it came before they were very young, mid-30s, but a lot of people are fascinated about that Harlem. It's called the Harvest Moon Ball, and that was very interesting, and I love the fact that it was as big as American Idol of today. And again, there's American Idol. People are just so tuned into that right now because it's fun to just watch people perform and come alive. And it definitely strikes a chord.
The idea of music transcending things. I'm a former dance teacher. I mean, I started teaching ballet at 15. And so that's probably another reason that I really identified with the book, because the idea that the dance, for me, made my soul soar like Zoe's soul soars with the music. That was easy for me to understand, and I've had that same feeling, and that being overcome by the sensation of the music. But I don't think that somebody has to be a dancer or a musician. I think that sometimes just listening to some of these things just can make our soul just soar, because the music does transcend age and gender and race and whatever country you're in. A melody is a melody is a melody, and if it's beautiful, I recognize it wherever I am.
That's true. And I was always fascinated just sometimes by the whole effect of how thousands of people are sitting just still in like an auditorium to listen to an orchestra. When you think about it, if you step away for a minute, just how does that really happen? By nature, you know, we're a very frenetic species. But music throughout ages has always had this effect that sort of puts people in that trance. And I was always fascinated by that.
Well, I think that's a really good word to use, because it does. We sort of, we don't have an out-of-body experience exactly, but it does put us in a different place.
Mm-hmm.
And it does things to us physically and our brain. From a brain standpoint, the brain is just working 90 miles an hour trying to keep up and make sense of the melody. And one of the things that the brain research talks about is how positive music is in our lives, and that music and dance really make that brain work hard to try to keep up and make sense of what's going on.
Yeah, I studied. I did research in some. There's a few really really great books out about you know, how the brain and music, you know, are related, and I try to incorporate that as well in the writing of it.
You got some interesting quotes that introduced some of the chapters. I really thought those were a very interesting way to do that, and they're from all kinds of places, music history, all kinds of places, and I really liked those quotes. Of course, we're running out of time, and I knew we would.
Mm-hmm.
If you could look our readers in the eye, what would you like to tell them about the bottom line message of the practice room?
I would just love to tell them to have fun with it, read it, let yourself immerse yourself in the book, because it's a great journey, and you'll learn, but you'll have fun, and it's just like, it's almost like a movie. Yeah, I mean, I think you could just let yourself be suspended in this for you know, a few days, and you'll come out with a really, really good feeling and a great story, and probably have learned something in the process.
I agree with you completely, and I think the fact that you have written screenplays is reflected in the book, because I told you before we started recording that I feel that, because the way that you write really creates wonderful pictures in my mind, and I see the book. It plays in my head as I read the book. If the listeners want to know more about you, want to know more about the practice room, is there a website that they can visit?
Oh, sure. It's there's links by the www.thepracticeroomthebook.com or susanzeidler.com. And, of course, it's on Amazon. If you want to just go to the book section and put in the practice room, you'll find it.
And Zeidler is spelled Zeidler.
That's right.
Susan, you have been an absolute pleasure. I really enjoyed the novel, and I enjoyed our conversation so very much. Thank you for being our guest today.
Thank you so much for having me, Cheryl. Great to talk to you.
We'd also like to thank you, our listeners, for joining us today on Inside the Writer's Cafe. And remember, until you join us next time, pick up a good book and read.